love supreme. Dawn comes, and you cook up the thick sin between impotence and death. Fuel the tenor sack's cannibal heart, genitals and sweat that makes you clean. A love supreme, a love supreme. Why you so black? Cause I am. Why you so funky? Cause I am. Why you so black? Cause I am. Why you so sweet? Cause I am. Why you so black? Cause I am. A love supreme, a love supreme. So sick you couldn't play Naima. So flat we ached for song you'd concealed with your own blood. Your diseased liver gave out its purity. The inflated heart pumps out the tenor kiss. Tenor love, a love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme, a love supreme.
It's Michael Harper reading his poem, Dear John, Dear Coltrane. Were you listening to, obviously you must have been listening to a lot of Coltrane while writing this. Had you seen him perform shortly before writing this?
Well, I began to watch Coltrane play live in about 1955. And I wrote the poem actually before Coltrane died. Coltrane died in 1967. I wrote the poem in 1966. And I was terrified because, you know, as poets, you sometimes have material select you. And I, of course, knew his music and listened to him live many times. I'd written about his great drummer, Elvin Jones, and McCoy Tyner was a friend of mine. We were the same age and pretty much grew up together. But Coltrane was a special figure, and he was not a terribly talkative man, and I had spent many, many times being in his company. But when I wrote this poem, I was terrified that I was, writing his death warrant or something. And the reason why the refrain, A Love Supreme, is because he himself had played that in 1964, and he and his musicians had chanted that. And it was a refrain, a kind of anthem, which became widespread among the black community, musical community, and Coltrane was the superior musician of his generation.
Michael Harper, do you feel that you have learned about language and its rhythms from reading with musicians, as you've occasionally done?
Absolutely, and the most important thing you learn from musicians is phrasing, and you learn it from the singers, the Bessie Smiths, the Billie Holidays, the Mamie Smiths, the Aretha Franklins even. But you also learn more than anything else about the authenticity of phrasing, because musicians take you to places that you might not necessarily want to go, and they go instantly to the transcendent. And of course, the mastery of their playing is not technical mastery. It is spiritual mastery. It is to take you to a place that perhaps is not your mode. And when we are in performance with musicians, they take us to places sometimes we don't want to go. We're not prepared to go. They take us instantly there. And it seems to me that the pioneering efforts of great musicians, and Coltrane is just one of many, gives us a way, indicates the path. And of course, they're on the frontier, which is one of the reasons why we lose so many, because they're forced to live at the cutting edge of the society. And oftentimes, that's sacrifice to themselves. And I'm not only talking about drugs. I'm talking about the rigor with which they have to express themselves, bring themselves, and of course the pressure that black people in particular are under and always have been. The musicians are the frontier. They're on the frontier, and we have to learn how to follow.
That was poet Michael Harper, recorded in 2000. He died last Saturday at the age of 78. On Monday's show, how genetics is profoundly changing our definition of disease and the way we treat disease. We talk with oncologist Siddhartha Mukherjee about his new book, The Gene. Mukherjee also is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book about the history of cancer, The Emperor of All Maladies. Hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.B. Nesper. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bean Cool. Thank you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the law firm Cooley LLP. With offices in the U.S., Europe, and China, Cooley advises entrepreneurs, investors, financial institutions, and established companies around the world, where innovation meets the law. And from the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide to address inequality in all its forms. Learn more at FordFoundation.org.
Oncologist Siddhartha Mukherjee says for years, cancer treatments were formulaic. Now, advances in science have him asking different kinds of questions.
How much information can I glean from this individual patient's tumor? Can I understand something about its particular behavior? And now, can I cleverly tailor some therapy?
Precision treatments for cancer later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, resident artists on Southeast Ferries make a port call at Forum at 360, reflecting culture and climate change in their work in Tidelands Ferry Tour. At 9, Michael Kimmelman and Philippe de Montebello talk art on Great Conversations. American Forum is next with the United States of Jihad investigating America's homegrown terrorists. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
And a good afternoon to you on this beautiful sunny afternoon in Juneau. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this Friday edition of a Juneau Afternoon. Rachel Utzler will be here today to highlight Saturday's Community Day on campus. We've got a full show today with Nan Mundy here to talk about Arbor Day. A great privilege to meet Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn, who are going to be playing tonight here at the A&B Hall, and that's going to be a great concert. Gwen Ballas is here to share a rundown of Saturday's International Migratory Bird Day events at the Community Garden. And Dan Kirkwood will be here with his great music to talk about his performance that's happening tonight at the Alaskan. That's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, all that, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous people say oil development is threatening the Amazon rainforest. Two women traveled from Ecuador to New York City this week to a United Nations forum to discuss their fight. Tamara Lindstrom reports.
It's been more than a decade of hardship, but Gloria Ushigua has a lot of fight left.
We're fighting. We're fighting not only for ourselves, for half of the Amazon. We're fighting for everyone who breathes, the whites, the blacks, the Indians, everyone.
Before she was president of the Sapara Women's Organization, Ushigua was a mother living in the Ecuadorian Amazon when work crews protected by military came to explore for oil.
People were dying. They were killing in the jungle while the government was doing this agreement with the Chinese company. They were coming to exploit us, but we didn't want the exploitation in our land.
Despite the protests, the Ecuadorian government signed agreements in January with China's state-run Andes Petroleum. Ushigua has come to the UN to ask the global community to step in and stop the oil drilling. She, along with Alicia Kuhuya of the Warani Nation, are part of a growing group of women working to protect their land.
Because we women are important. We harvest, we are caregivers, we share, we plant, we attend to our children, and for that, we know our jungle. We understand how the petroleum pollutes the land.
Despite their effort and the 3,000-mile trek to New York City, Kuhuya hasn't seen much change.
It's not working because we haven't spoken. This is maybe the first time we're talking to the press. Maybe you'll know what's happening in the Yasuni forests better.
She hopes the global community will better understand people from the Ecuadorian Amazon. I'm Tamara Lindstrom.
The Coastal Oregon School District is the latest to drop its Indian mascot and symbol. Correspondent Tom Bonsi has more.
Oregon school districts have until next summer to do away with Native American mascots and team names by order of the State Board of Education. The board determined that nicknames such as Braves, Indians, and Chieftains can be offensive and harm the learning environment for Native students. Oregon school districts have the option to seek the approval of a nearby tribe to keep a Native American-themed team name, but in Warrenton, Oregon, Superintendent Mark Jeffrey recommended against that course.
This isn't a settled issue, and I don't want to put the district in a position where on short notice somewhere down the road we're just going to have to change again. This is, a good time for us to do it, and I think it's the right thing to do.
This week, the local school board voted unanimously to retire the grade school Braves mascot and remove a lance and feather from the high school Warriors logo to make it generic. About a dozen other Oregon school districts with Native American mascots are negotiating their names' future, and more often than not, getting tribal support with conditions. For National Native News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Warrenton, Oregon.
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders campaigned on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota Thursday. He talked about a number of issues, including health care, jobs, higher education, and protecting the environment. Sanders called for a new relationship with Native American people. He asked the crowd to share their thoughts with him, which included people discussing the need for more youth programs, a fix to the Indian Health Service, and ways to address substance abuse. The stop comes ahead of the state's June primary. More than half a dozen people in northwestern New Mexico were arrested this week and faced charges of meth trafficking on the Navajo Reservation. The U.S. Attorney's Office for New Mexico says this comes after a multi-agency operation led by Homeland Security Investigations. Agencies are responding to an increase in methamphetamine trafficking in the Shiprock area. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including homeowners, life, and health policies. 789-5900.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you'll want to tune into a Juneau Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. Learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTOO.org.
I know it seems weird to promo the show that we're doing right now during the show, but sometimes mislabeling happens on files. That's what happens. Rachel Utzler is with me in the studio right now. Rachel, thanks so much for coming in.
Of course.
Rachel's from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and you're here to talk about tomorrow's Community Day on Campus.
Community
over at
Day
UAS.
On Campus, a giant community event. It is going to be at the UAS campus. Beautiful weather. This is fantastic. Is what we've had some inclement weather before,
yes.
But tomorrow's not going to be one. Tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. is when this event is going to be going on.
So what happens? What
basically
happens?
Basically, we're building
Day?
This Community Day on Campus Carnival of Arts. Basically,
cool.
What this is a collaboration between UAS, Juneau Jazz and Classics, the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and the Juneau School District. This is kind of celebrating parts of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival, which is in full swing,
yeah.
Going on right now, obviously. They have a whole music schedule, a whole music lineup that goes on from 11 until after 3, probably about 3:30, I'm guessing, that will be playing. Hopefully they'll get to play outside and not all tuck themselves away into the library. But even if they are doing the library, they will be piping the music outside, I heard, this year.
Oh, okay.
Which will be really great. Because we have this whole list of music. We also have the giant, like 200, 250 person Juno School District All City Elementary Art Show. And then they have a big student recognition ceremony right at noon.
Oh, that's cool.
But this has over 200 pieces of student art that is all put out into the big, in a quad area, kind of in between the vendor booths and the bouncy house that's going to be there.
Bouncy house. Then you buried your lead.
Oh, no, that's only one of the many little things that's going on. So we have this whole day of music going on, and then this is basically a free festival for all kinds of community groups. I had over, I think I'm about 37 people have now signed up. So there'll be all kinds of booths. Should we just go through this list?
Go through the vendor list.
This is pretty much everyone that's going to be either a food cart or arts and crafts or informational or anything like that. The tables that we have the people that are supporting this is Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Juno Jazz and Classics, and University of Alaska Southeast. So they will each have a table there. We'll also be joined by the Juno Public Libraries. They're going to have stuff on their story time. They've been doing great programs lately. We have got Selena Beerley. We have Sensi. We have Princess House. We have Patty
Princess
Juby.
House. Wait
Princess
a minute.
House. Princess House is a food, art of food and housewares kind of supply.
Cool.
Sort of thing. We have Patty Juby with Mendenhall Glacier Studio. We have the National Weather Service there that we can be there and tell you that it's sunny. Woo! They don't have to listen to complaints this year
at all.
Probably excited. One of my favorite things that always shows up is Dipak, and Dipak's going to be there with a touch tank, and they do fish prints, which are super cool, especially the squid ones.
Yeah,
love the squid fish prints.
Oh, man.
We have Glacial Grinds. He does his ice smooth, or what, the, ice, shave ice?
We have
Front Street Cafe. They'll be doing something on the grill. We have Kai's Cotton Candy, which is always really fun to mix with something on the grill. I've had a cotton candy covered French fry before. That's really kind of fun.
It's good for you, too, right?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
We have the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. They're going to be doing stuff on bear safety. We have Cindy Hartman Moore. She does sewn items. We have the Juno Economic Development Council. They'll be there doing STEM summer camp information. We've got brown boot costumes because you got to have some face painting going on. And we have Forno Rosso, which is our new little wood-fired pizza truck food cart that's been in town. The Barefoot Bouncers, they're going to be the ones with the giant big, they said weather dependent, so we don't have to worry about it. We got the bouncy house and the slide going on over there. We also have Echo Ranch Bible Camp. The Dog House is going to be doing reindeer hot dogs. The Filipino community, they have some food booths going on. There will be information from Raven Homeschool. Magic All Around will have books and wands, it looks like. We have Meet Me in Alaska. They have art and clothing. We have Jamberry, Alaska Wildlife Alliance, which they said they have free prizes. I don't know what the prizes are going to be.
You're giving out wildlife.
Exactly.
I
They're going to be the Southeast chapter.
I want a marmot.
That would be super fun. A marmot on a leash.
Thanks for stopping by the booth. Here's a marmot.
We've got some Tupperware, NCADD, Lua Row Clothing is a new clothing place in town.
Okay.
We have Copa, you've got to have ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
and American Cancer Society Relay for Life, and then we have Juno Cheer Club, and Naki just signed up, and that's jewelry.
And the Relay for Life just goes through, it's like the finish line is kind of around there or something,
I don't think,
right?
They're actually doing the Relay for Life. They're going to be doing more of the fundraising and like a garage sale. That one actually does, they're like, can I do a garage sale?
Yeah.
I'm like, sure you can.
Whatever.
Anyone can do anything. This is a community day. It's a do-it-yourself event sort of thing.
Right,
you can
just
show up, set up your own tent. Speaking of which, I also do know that Makerspace is going to be there, which is one of my favorite little groups around here. They, this year, instead of making toolboxes, we're going to be doing pipe cars, which I just saw a little video. They're making cars out of pipes because we have this, we found tons of rubber bands. So we're like, what can we do with rubber bands?
All right.
So they're making cars with rubber bands with looks like CDs for wheels and these pipes, and they kind of, they're like little roller derby, or no, what are those?
Boxcar derby sort of things. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they'll be doing that. We'll probably set them up on a hill someplace just so they can cause lots of super fun stuff.
Right.
And then let's quickly run through this music schedule that's going to be happening. Let's see. We're going to start at 11 o'clock. We'll be jam. At which is Juno Alaska Music Matters, which everyone knows in town. 11:20, we got Little Dipper String Ensemble. 11:40, we have the Alaska Youth Choir. At noon is when we're actually going to have the student recognition ceremony for the All Elementary Art Show. 12:45, we will have Capital City Brass. 1:05 is Floyd Dryden 7th and 8th Grade Orchestra. 1:25 is Thunder Mountain High School Orchestra. 1:45 is Alaska Pella. 2:05 is Last Chance Jazz Band. 2:30 is All-Star Big Band. And 3 o'clock is Thunder Mountain High School Jazz Band.
Woo!
So you all,
there's so much going
so
on.
So much stuff going on.
Oh, my gosh. Community
and bring
day
some
campus.
Sunscreen.
Yes.
You definitely need sunscreen. We do have some tents that some people will be under, but you're going to
be
in the sun.
You're going to be in the sun. All right. Well,
bring water,
tell me the hours again.
11 to 4.
11 to 4 is happening tomorrow. There's no reason to miss it. It's going to be beautiful weather and All these members of the community are out with these tents and their information and selling stuff and playing music and all the great stuff and looking at art and student art and everything
else. It is definitely a community day.
It's going to be
and
a super
fun. It is
a
carnival of arts.
Well, thank you, Rachel.
And it is at UAS.
Coming by from the JHC. And it's out at UAS, out at the campus there. It's kind of behind the Egan Library kind of area.
Yes,
in the quad
the very
area.
Quad, the whole thing.
By the Raven statue and all that. Yeah.
Oh, it'll be taking over.
All right. All right. Very good. Rachel, thanks so much for coming in. That's Community Day on Campus. It's starting tomorrow at 11, right? 11 to 4. Thank you. Now, here is a little bit of music coming up, and we're going to be getting to talk to Nan Mundy from about Arbor Day, and then an interview with Bayla Fleck and Abigail Washburn as well. And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Sitting in the studio with me is Bayla Fleck and Abigail Washburn, who are going to be playing tonight over at the A&B Hall, and thanks so much to both of you for coming in, and welcome to Juno, and thanks for bringing the weather. We appreciate that.
Oh, well, yes. I'm appropriately dressed, clearly. You can tell I come from Tennessee. I still have my down coat on and my warm hat with the little puffball.
Yeah, she's dressed the way she thinks it ought to be rather than the way it actually is.
She wants the full Alaskan experience, no matter
what
the weather is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks. Now, Bayla, you've been here before, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I think this is my fourth, maybe fifth.
And Abigail, have you been here before?
I have never been here before.
But as you guys were talking about earlier, can I reveal, you may have written a song that had Juno in the lyrics at one time.
Indeed. It's called, I can't remember what it's called. What is it called?
That's a good name. I like that.
Can't you hear that last train come rolling?
Last train come rolling, I think you called it.
But there's actually a much more dear and specific association we have with Juno above and beyond this song that I'm having trouble remembering the particulars of. We named our little boy Juno.
That's right, but we spelled it wrong.
That's
Tell me
right.
about the spelling.
J-U-N-O.
Right, and what's the significance of that for you?
Well, it just seemed like I think we named him after our Abby's grandma, who was named June, J-U-N-E, and Juno seemed like how to spell it.
Yeah.
So we didn't really do any research, but although the only research that we did said that Juno was the name of a Greek goddess, I believe.
Yeah, the Greek goddess of the gods, yes.
Yeah.
And I thought, that can't be a bad thing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Power.
Power.
Yes.
But we did also realize that we were, by giving him the name Juno, we were associating him with this city for the rest of his life. Because people often ask, oh, Juno as in the city in Alaska, you know? And
we say, no. Not really.
Not really. But it's still, we did contemplate that because it's a name he's going to carry his whole life. And even though I had never been to Juno, just the thought, the mystique, I suppose you could say, of Juno, Alaska, the snow-capped peaks, the nature, the glaciers, the water, the people, you know, being hardy and living through long, long winters. And I don't know, it all went through my head,
yeah,
definitely, when contemplating his name and thinking this is going to be a special place for him. He's always going to want to go to Juno, Alaska, because his name is connected in
we'll
that way.
We'll welcome him when he comes.
Which is why we didn't bring him with us.
the cruel irony of it. Well, you guys have multiple stops on this tour.
We're doing three shows in 3 days, and we're going to have some really early morning flights, and we just thought it was kindness to him, and I guess to us, too. It's the first time we've been away from him this long.
I was going
to
ask, how old is he?
He's going to be 3 in a few days.
Yeah.
All right.
He's going to be 3. And we've toured almost all the states and Europe and so many places. He's been with us for every single moment of it. And
that's awesome.
It's been wonderful. So we're going through withdrawal today. We don't even know how to talk to each other anymore. We're sitting there in the room like,
I was going to kind of ask that question next for people like you who are collaborating and you're doing that in a very creative way. Have you felt a specific change in your music since Juno came along?
Well, the truth is we really started collaborating intently when he came along, so yes. But that's a lot of why, because typically before Juno came into our life, I'd be out touring or Abby would be out touring, and we'd come and meet together in between. Sometimes we'd join each other on tours, but when we decided to have a child, we decided we wanted to do it right and not be absentee, neither of us be absentee parents, as we've seen a lot of musician friends go through tough times. Sometimes they don't even stay together, and a lot of it is because the husband feels like, wow, I got to get out there and make money, and then wife's home with the baby, and then over the course of years, they become separate, and sometimes it doesn't work out. And so we just wanted to think ahead on all that from everything we'd seen, and so we decided that not only that, we really like playing with each other.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just that. It was we'd been waiting for the right time to join forces, because actually Abby's grandma Juno asked us to play at a church, a Unitarian church in Evanston,
Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, and we did it for her, but we weren't really ever expecting to be touring together, particularly. Mm-hmm. Although we liked each other's music, mm-hmm. and we did this one show, and it was so easy and so natural, and it brought out things in both of us that we didn't expect, and we found that we really enjoyed the Clawhammer and Three Fingers style melding together, and that it was actually quite easy. It was surprising us because there really isn't a history of Three Finger and Clawhammer. Even though they're both very old styles, there isn't really a band or a duo that was the center of what they did.
Yeah, just to back up, in case people are not familiar, you are both banjo players.
We're both banjo
Let's
players.
Cover
yes,
that.
Yes.
And one of us is a great singer.
Okay.
Figaro, Figaro, Figaro. No, it's not me.
You're claiming title to that? and just to back up a little further, too, and as you were saying, myself, I'm not a musician, it never really occurred to me that two banjos playing as the sole members of a band doesn't really happen that often.
No.
That's right, which is ironic because people look at us and go, oh, they're doing a banjo thing, it must be a traditional thing. And it has a sound of legitimate traditional music, but the truth is it's very unusual. And so, therefore, there's a lot of room for creativity, which is when you hear us separately doing our own music, a lot of times we're blending with musicians outside of the traditional scene.
And that's definitely a history that you've had.
Yeah, but Abby, too. I mean, she's been performing with Chinese musicians.
Right.
And interacting with all kinds of musicians her whole career, too, but in different ways. You know?
Yeah, such a fascinating blending of what you've done with musical styles. You're more of a traditional, I would say, traditional American style, but then melding it with the Chinese music that... how long were you in China?
I've been going there off and on since 1996.
Yeah,
I speak Chinese, and it's a big, big part of my life.
Right.
And actually, my best girlfriend from Beijing just moved to Nashville, Tennessee. And so we've been playing a lot together as well. She's an amazing guzheng player, which is a 21-string zither the kind you hear in kung fu movies where it's like,
yes,
you know.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I almost did Tiger Sleuth the Mountain right then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of the sound, I wanted to play just a track that's from the project that you guys did together, which is called Bela Flecht and Abigail Washburn. Is that the name of the... That's the name of the album?
Yeah, we dug deep on that one.
We used up all our creativity on this next piece you're about to play. We didn't have anything left for the title.
I always heard that Albert Einstein had only white shirts and khaki pants in his closet because he said, I don't want to spend time on that.
Yeah.
I want to spend my energy on other things. So
yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why this is such a creative work of music.
If we'd had a good title, we would have used it.
I swear.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
But I wanted to talk about this one. I happened to just see this video called Shotgun Blues. And is that a traditional piece that you reworked, or is it one that is an original piece?
It's original.
Okay.
And I did start writing it after listening to an old blues tune called The Shotgun Blues. But it was all about a man going after a woman.
Yeah, right.
And for
right.
for her, you know, for his jealous ways and yeah. fear of what might happen with his woman if he doesn't hold her down with a shotgun. So, that's a frightening thought. And those kinds of things are the center of a lot of the old blues, is, you know, man yeah. singing about getting his woman. So this is a bit of a turnaround, because this would be from the female perspective and just feeling quite strongly about, and I will say that the content ended up being very much inspired by the old murder ballads and the old blues,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that it was usually the woman who was the victim mm. of the situations.
And I wanted to just listen to this just for a little bit and then have you reflect on the sound that you were able to create out of this, because to me it was almost startling to hear this as yeah. being created just by two banjos. So let's just listen to a little bit of this. This is Bela Flecht and Abigail Washburn with Shotgun Blues. Shotgun Blues, Bela Flecht and Abigail Washburn. You'll be able to hear that and much more tonight as they perform here in Juneau, which is we're all very excited about. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about the sounds that were coming from the beginning of that, which Bela, when you go into the three-finger playing, that's something that I recognize as obviously a banjo. It's coming in. It's got that kind of very familiar sound to it. But before that, it has this
right.
otherworldly thing going on.
So there's a couple of things going on. One is Abby is playing a cello banjo. It's a big floppy low banjo. It's an octave lower at least because she's in a different tuning than I am. And the other part of it is that we're both hitting the tops of the banjo heads because a banjo is a drum. And so Abby is hitting the low, you know, hers is a much lower sounding drum and mine's a higher sounding drum. And I'm not sure how we got to that. Do you remember how we got to that?
Well, I do know we both were trying to think of all the different ways you can play a banjo so that we could have a lot of variety of sounds on our record and not just the sound of two banjos, clawhammer and
bluegrass.
And bluegrass in the same range mm-hmm. constantly playing through the whole record. So I remember us both looking at each other and being like, we got to play these like drums at some point. I mean, the head of the banjo is literally a drum head. It is a Remo drum head, you know? So that's where I think it just came from, wanting to experiment with all the sounds that can come out of the instruments. And it felt like just the right place once we started playing the introduction to this song on top of it. Because it's such an eerie song, and it's also a hunt. So the sound of a drum, like hunting, It's a woman hunting a man for the way he did her wrong. You know,
the three finger is the pursuit, the run, the
right.
kind of that. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And in this
really
case,
that up.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
No,
in this case, Abby's taking like a base kind of role. With that low banjo, and I'm taking the more traditional role.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who come tonight, we're going to have five banjos on stage, and one is a cello banjo, one is a baritone banjo that Bela plays, and we have our two main instruments, and then we have a ukulele banjo. So there is actually a surprising range of sounds that people are going to hear, and you hear it on the record too.
And the two main instruments, Abby plays a clawhammer style banjo. It's made by Ohm Company from Colorado, and I play an old Gibson Master Tone from 1937, flathead.
Yes, which is
just for the record.
They're back behind us here in the studio, and just in the cases, they look cool. So, out
yeah.
of the cases, I'm sure they're amazing. Well, I'd love to sit here and spend another 2 hours talking to you,
yeah.
but you guys got to get to a gig, and we have to move on. But thank you so much for coming in today, Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. They're playing tonight. At the A&B Hall, and thanks so much for coming to Juneau, and people are going to have a great experience listening to five different banjo types played by two different banjo players here in a way that is perhaps played like the banjo kind of, and maybe has never been played before, which is a pretty exciting thing to think about.
Definitely the combination, yeah.
All right, well, thanks so much. We're going to listen to a little bit more here of Shotgun Blues. Thanks again to Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. Have a great performance tonight.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Right. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
And that was Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn in an interview I got to record just about an hour ago. And thanks to them for dropping by before they had to go to their gig. It was really exciting to talk to them. In the studio with me now, Chris Myrtle and Molly Hodges. Thanks so much for you guys for dropping by. And we want to talk about Arbor Day.
We sure do.
Let's talk trees and Arbor Day and maybe history of Arbor Day and how it started in Alaska and all that stuff. So let's start maybe with the history of Arbor Day itself, the actual national holiday. How
sure.
did that start, Chris?
Yeah, sure, Andy. Well, Arbor Day is the celebration of trees. And it started back in the 1500s, back in Spain, way back when.
Wow. Who knew?
Yeah, but I don't think they kept very good records way back then, you know, written on papyrus or whatever they did back then. But it first came to America in 1872. It started in Nebraska. By Julius Sterling Morton, and he proclaimed Arbor Day, which was the April 22nd. And on that Arbor Day, that one day, they planted over a million trees in Nebraska alone.
Wow.
So, you know, 150 years later, roughly, it's celebrated in all 50 states, and in some places it's a huge event. We celebrate Arbor Day on the third Monday of May in Alaska. We're a little bit later than everybody
sure.
else, just because we're Alaskan, we like to be different.
planning season.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, right.
So anyway, that's where Arbor Day started. So it started way, way back when, but it's
right.
been going since 1872 in the United States.
Cool. And then Molly, the history of it here in our state. How did that start?
Well, some kids in Kodiak got wind that we didn't have our official Arbor Day. Some people were planting trees. Even in Juneau, the garden club way back when was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But these Kodiak kids wanted official. So they wrote the governor, and the governor Egan at the time said, all right. And the garden club was all about it. Well, so the Coast Guard got involved later and shipped, 42 jack pines or, you know, any number of jack pines back
right.
to Kodiak for the kids. And that's how it got started. The first planting was a lodgepole pine, wasn't it,
yep.
at the city museum, which was then the city library. And we're going to celebrate this year again at the same site, now the city museum. We'll be replacing the hawthorn tree that's we all love, the one that's over by the totem pole on
right.
the side of the building. It was diseased, and it just was petering out by midsummer, and
mm-hmm.
so it needed to be replaced. So we found a hardy one. We asked all the experts, like Chris in town. We found the hardiest one for Alaska, It's going in on Monday.
No, very cool.
And we're going to have help with the Daisy Scouts and the Boy Scouts, and a lot of the dignitaries will be there. I can list those off.
Well, is the hawthorn tree that's being planted a large, or what sort of size is it?
Oh, we're going to get a nice, good size.
Okay,
one. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to crane it in or something? Or
no, it won't be that big.
Okay.
We're bringing in a Sikorsky helicopter.
Okay, well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let's make a big helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old hawthorn was Paul Scarlet, and unfortunately in southeast Alaska, where we don't have enough degree heating days, a lot of rain, the hawthorns, the canopy outgrows the roots. The roots just don't really expand, and so it's pretty typical, the beautiful red hawthorns that we see that'll start blooming in the next couple of weeks. And it's actually one of the most photographed trees in Juneau. That's one right next to it. I believe it's Taming the Atom, or what's the name of the totem? Anyway, something
I
to do with
know.
The atom.
Yeah, no,
I
right.
think it's Taming the Atom is the name of the totem pole, right next to the City Museum. So it's one of the most photographed trees in Juneau. But it's just, as Molly said, it's just been declining over the decades, and it's falling over. And then usually by July, it loses all of its leaves just due to rust. So we've got a new disease resistant and more hardy hawthorn going in.
Now, we talked about sort of the history of Arbor Day as it just developed. But what do you feel is the importance of Arbor Day?
Well, I think the thing is that we tend to take trees, especially in southeast Alaska, we tend to take them for granted. You know, trees are a really important component of our economy, you know, especially back when we were doing a lot of timber harvest in the Tongass. It plays huge cultural significance with the Tlingit and the Haidas and, you know, all the Pacific Northwest, North American natives. And so trees just play a really prominent role, you know, whether it be habitat, cleaning the environment, stabilizing soils, being fun to climb as a kid, throwing horse chestnuts at each other. You know, remember that as a kid?
Sure.
You'd pull the horse chestnuts off the ground with all the spikes and you'd throw them at your buddy on your way home from school. So trees just play a really vital role in terms of creating what I see is a real positive sense of community. It's been proven numerous times that communities that have a healthy urban forest have a much higher quality of living, and as a result have a higher economy. So pay tends to be higher. You tend to have higher level jobs. People tend to stay in these communities longer. But, you know, in southeast Alaska, we're surrounded by the Tongass, and we tend to take it for granted that we don't always do such a good job at planting trees in the urban environment because it's all around us. But, you know, one of the reasons why we probably moved to southeast Alaska is because of the trees and the mountain.
Right, yeah. Well, just a little bit more about the festivities that are going to be happening. How can people kind of get involved with the time that it's happening, that sort of thing?
Okay, well, I'll start with the last things first. We're going to have two events at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. One is going to be Chris here, and Chris Myrtle. He's going to be talking about the trees that you and your neighbors will appreciate. And I emphasize that because we are surrounded by the forest, but we need different kinds of trees in our own yards. And not every tree that we grew up loving, if we're from down south, grows well here. So it takes a little education, and I think Chris gives a great show. So I'm very excited about that one. That's going to be on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. And then on Thursday, Assistant Professor of Forest Systems Ecology, Brian Buma, is going to be giving a show at the Nickelodeon, and that'll be at 5 o'clock on Thursday. His program's going to be on what Chris was referring to earlier as the forest ecosystem, and I think that if you've ever been out walking in in the wilderness and wondered, what is that tree? I don't remember that tree. Well, he'll be the man to ask. He's going to be talking about ranges of different trees throughout southeast, and it should be a very interesting program. Our main event, which is celebrating the 50 years of Arbor Day, is going to be at the museum, like we said, and we are so excited for our lineup. Now, Master of Ceremonies is going to be Pete Griffin, and he'll tell the story of Arbor Day. He was a former district ranger, so he's got a good background mm-hmm. that way, and he's also a good storyteller.
Great storyteller,
so I'm very
yeah.
excited. And we've invited Governor Walker. We're hoping he will attend. And the lieutenant governor is going to be there. Senator Egan is going to be there, and he'll speak. You know, his dad was the first golden
right.
shovel. We are going to have two golden shovels this time. The first event was a golden shovel event, so we're
cool.
matching it and then doubling it. The Coast Guard is going to be represented. They played a big part in the original story. And Captain Shannon Green, the Coast Guard commander, Sector Juno, is going to be there. Beth Pendleton, Alaska Region 10 Forester, is going to be there. Chris Mache, State Forester, the Director of Division of Forestry, is going to be there. And then Mary Becker will represent the Juno Assembly.
Great. What a lineup.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Powerful group there.
And Radiohead's playing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
We got Radiohead.
We got Radiohead.
They're going to do
they're starting the new tour.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're doing their Plastic Tree tour.
Well, that sounds awesome. All the great festivities and celebrations happening at Arbor Day. Molly and Chris, thanks so much for coming in. Letting us know about it.
Thank
Get
you,
out there and help plant some trees.
Yeah.
All
come
right.
and join us.
Great. Have a happy Arbor Day.
You too.
Happy
All right.
Arbor Day.
Katie Thoreau, one of the featured artists for Juno Jazz and Classics. She's going to be playing Saturday night at the Jack on the 14th at 7:30. So check it out. That's pretty cool stuff. In the studio with me is other great musicians in town. We got Goldwing in town. It's Dan Kirkwood and Clay Good. Thanks you guys for coming in. Appreciate
Thanks,
it on this sunny, sunny day.
Great to be here.
It's good to be in a dark room.
With you.
It's nice and cool in here, though.
It is.
You know, it's nice.
It looks
yes,
pleasant and relaxed. We're going to go back out. But
yeah. You were just telling us that you have this bombshell announcement that there's going to be drinks served at the Alaskan tonight and music.
Yeah. So
yes.
I don't know. You've never checked this out before. I think just something, you know, kind of a classic Juno tradition. If you're looking, if you're a little thirsty or maybe thinking about some dancing. It's called the Alaskan
it's
Hotel
called the
Bar.
Alaskan.
I've been a few times and had some good times.
It's good. I could recommend it.
Yeah. I've heard stories.
You've heard. Yes. You don't remember a thing.
Yeah. I saw a walking tour going by just now.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, isn't it? To see people go by the Alaskan, like, ooh, what are they telling? What tales do they tell?
In the early 2000s, the Great Alaskan Bluegrass Band.
Yes.
The stage is just covered with posters from the decade.
It's awesome.
Actually, tour of musical history.
It is. I always see the Cook County Blues Band in there is one that I always like, that was a band, man. They were great.
Speaking of the Cook County Blues Band, there's a spinoff of that band is playing tonight with Goldwing. It's called Groove Session.
Really?
And it's got Steve Nelson.
Steve Nelson is playing with you guys?
He is playing.
This is a bombshell.
See, and Adrian Menny's there.
All right.
And we'll have John Unzicker, and we have Mike Busey and Doug Bridges blowing horn lines. And that's
cool.
An instrumental groove session for 90 minutes to warm up the house to get ready for Goldwing. It'll be cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might be more excited about that than my own
set. Than your own actual performance.
But the other great news is that Goldwing, which is the band that I've been playing with here in Juneau, and just, this band has just come alive and really, not only do we have amazing musicians already, but adding Steve Nelson to the lineup on the Hammond B3 organ, which I think you guys just carried down
just
on your
backs. We carried that into the Alaska.
So with the Leslie amp, too?
Yes.
Signed by Booker T?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I know it well, man.
Yeah, you carried it.
I have helped carry it.
Yeah,
I've helped carry that amp.
You could help carry it again tonight.
I could. They're also looking for volunteers to help carry the amp. It's a massive amp. It's actually a really cool setup that he has, this B3 organ with the original Leslie amp with the
spinning. It's like going to church.
Explain what a B3 and a Leslie is.
Yeah. Well, it is like a church organ. It's got speakers that actually spin, and the organ player regulates the speed of the spinning, which gives it that great warbling, whipping sound.
Yeah, it's so cool. And Steve is a master at the beat. I mean,
he really is.
I love that you dragged him out for an outside gig.
Yep.
I get to hear him jam at his house, which is like just a privilege to go hear him play because he, he's one of the few like boogie woogie cats.
Yeah.
He can actually get that going, and that stuff is just like a lost art almost.
He plays it all.
Yeah.
And so if you've heard us play before, we have it's rock and roll, it's a little country, it's a little folky. So taking that kind of like really nice, chill, precise, dry country sound,
mm-hmm.
and adding that sort of boogie woogie, that organ, that richness,
soul.
That kind of funk has really been fun for us, and we've just been having a blast playing
cool.
together.
That's going to be really fun. So, tell me a little bit, more about this idea of space country as you kind of describe your music a little bit, maybe a little tongue in cheek, but what do you bring to the music that you're playing?
Well, country music is something I was last night. Talking with this guy named Bela Fleck, who happens to be in town and also playing tonight. I mean, check it out, maybe.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Who I got to pick up from the airport. And I was saying, I kind of had this realization that Juneau's actually an incredible town for American music. Blues bands like you guys have played in and the jazz that you can hear in this town. And in particular, the Folk Fest and the Americana music that gets played here. My passion has always been kind of more rock and roll, more psychedelic stuff. And so bringing in folk music and just this more kind of psychedelic element, maybe in the lyrics more than anything. But I think that when we live in an America where we've already marched across the West and right through Alaska, what's next?
Yeah, right.
There's a line in one of our songs, when you walk under satellites, there's nowhere on Earth that's far enough to get away. So. What's
next. Right.
So that's kind of inspirationally where we're going.
Right.
And then so that wonderful Telecaster sound from Ben Higdon and
it's that Western open sky kind of feel. Yeah.
You played Clay in so many bands, right?
I get them all.
And
I'm
so
a lucky guy.
Tell me a little bit more about what you try to bring as the drummer to this band. What sort of sound are you trying to bring?
Well, I'm really pleased to play with Goldwing. I do a lot of session playing in town. I don't play with too many bands, but Goldwing, I'd push people out of the way to play with them because, it's Dan's music. It's original stuff. It's really fresh. And instead of listening to somebody else's recording to see how you're going to do it or not going to do it, it's like, oh, this is Dan's song, and we're giving it life here. And it's super exciting to be part of the creative process with such a talented songwriter.
Yeah. Well,
Ben Higdon's a great, guitar picker, super minimalistic and super tasty. And Dan DeSlover's just a rock solid bass player, keeps me super honest.
So, yeah, right.
Yeah, we're a team.
That's cool.
So
yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you guys have to kind of hook it up in order to kind of keep the band going, right? I mean, that's the big thing.
That's our job. Drums.
Yeah, that's absolutely. All right, well, it's happening tonight, right?
Yeah.
At the Alaskan.
Tonight at the Alaskan.
Goldwing, but it's the warm-up band sounds fun too, man, right?
Groove so Session.
When do they start? 9-ish?
9:30-ish.
They start 9:30-ish? Okay, they're calling themselves Groove Session?
Groove Session.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like the sound of that. Then you guys are playing after that. It's Dan Kirkwood and Clay Good, part of Goldwing. Thanks
Goldwing.
So much for coming in. We're going to play a little bit of Dan's music here right now. This is called Manhattan, Montana.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks,
Andy.
All right. Look forward to seeing everybody there.
Cool, man. Dan Kirkwood of Goldwing, playing tonight at the Alaskan. Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, and we're going to hear now from Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 13th of May, 2016. It was on this day in 1607, a group of 103 English settlers arrived in what is now Virginia to found a colony they called Jamestown. They were not aware of it right away, but they had come to land in the middle of some 14,000 Algonquian-speaking Indians. They'd spent 4 months at sea. Their provisions were running low. The water near the settlement was not fit to drink. Most of the settlers were upper-class Englishmen. They had very few labor skills. When their leader, John Smith, went back to England, things started to fall apart. The colonists fought with the Indians. They ran out of food. Many of them died from disease. In the spring of 1610, a fleet arrived from England bearing provisions and new settlers, and so the colony was saved. And in 1613, they tried planting tobacco. The colony grew rapidly after that. The first African indentured servants arrived in 1619, and by the middle of the century, the slave trade was firmly established in the colony of Virginia, thanks to the fact that raising tobacco was labor-intensive, and most of the white settlers did not have the skills to know how to do it. It was on this day in 1637, Cardinal Richelieu of France invented the table knife. It was a regular knife, but rounded at the end, so that his guests could not stab the meat and eat it with the tips of their knives or pick their teeth, which had been the custom. It's the birthday of Arthur Sullivan, of Gilbert and Sullivan, born London, 1842, wrote the music for their 14 comic operas, including HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, and The Mikado. It's the birthday of the novelist Daphne du Maurier, born in London, 1907, whose cousins, the Davies boys, were the inspiration for Peter Pan. She wanted to be a writer herself. Her family had a summer home in Cornwall, on the southwestern tip of England. She once wrote of Cornwall, "Here was the freedom I desired, long sought for, freedom to write, to walk, to wander, freedom to climb hills, to pull a boat, to be alone." She set many of her books and stories there, including Jamaica Inn, Rebecca, and Frenchman's Creek. Here's a poem for today by William Stafford, entitled Pilgrims. They come to the door, usually carrying or leading a child, always with the book held between them and the world. They quote Ezekiel, Daniel, Kings. They look at us and think of Nebuchadnezzar eating the grass. It is good to listen, because maybe they are angels, and behind them the sky arches, the trees glisten in worship of the sun. These travelers in the Word and their offspring have their commission from somewhere, filtered down through mistakes, pride, greed, and the plans committees make, the way pilgrims have always come. Over their shoulders, day extends its hand. Beside them, a child whimpers. It bows its head as we bow. It hungers. It cries. It will be fed. Pilgrims, a poem by William Stafford from An Oregon Message, published by Harper and Row and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org, and by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to the studios here at A Juno Afternoon. And with me on the phone right now is Gwen Ballas, who wants to talk to us about Saturday's International Migratory Bird Day. The events are happening at the Community Garden. Gwen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about it. What's happening tomorrow? Migratory Bird Day is happening. I guess is that international or nationwide? Or
it is. It's international. It's celebrated at over 600 locations all the way from northern Canada all the way down to Argentina celebrating our shared migratory birds that go the span of the continent.
But it's amazing to think that there are birds that travel through Juneau that come from as far away as Argentina.
That's correct, yeah. And we're just really happy to welcome them back. We're at the height of migration here in mid-May, and Migratory Bird Day is celebrated usually the first or second Saturday in May. It's kind of up to your agency or organization when you want to actually have that celebration.
It's such a great time for us, though, because as you say, that's just the absolute peak of the migration happening. So what's happening specifically at the Community Garden?
So we have a bird banding demonstration. I've actually got some nets ready to go in the morning, and this is to show people the way that some of us study birds, by actually capturing them and then very gently attaching a band, which is like a bracelet, and it's got a unique number. And then if the bird is captured or found in another location, we can see where it went. And also many of the studies study survivorship of birds, because most migratory birds will come back to the same place sometimes even the same tree to make their nest every year. And so if you have your net there many rows, years in a row, you can see if they survived, and that tells you a lot about their populations.
It's utterly fascinating. I've gotten a chance to go out with the scientists in Creamer's Field one time doing mist netting and then banding birds. And for anyone who hasn't seen that process, I recommend it highly. It's utterly fascinating, and you really get the sense of the fragility of these little creatures when they're being, you know, when they're held in a scientist's hands. You know, it's just it's incredible that they make this journey.
Yeah, they really are tiny, you know, and you see them in hand, your hand dwarfs them. And we have everything from hummingbirds, which only weigh 3 grams, that's like a little more than a nickel. And even our warblers are very small. They weigh about as much as a pencil. You know, you could actually mail one an envelope with a regular stamp. They're that small.
Wow. That's incredible to think about that. You know, and these tiniest of creatures make the greatest of journeys. Incredible to think about. So what can people do to get involved in this, and what time is it happening, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, they can just show up and take a look, and it's kind of a drop-in any time between 8 and 10:30 tomorrow morning at the Juneau Community Garden, and that's the one off Montana Creek Road. And I do recommend showing up on the early side, more towards the 8, if you can get everyone out of bed, because birds are going to be waking up really early in the morning and most active during that time, especially tomorrow when it's going to be warm weather, and they're going to be getting a little bit tired earlier in the day.
Yeah. Well, Gwen Ballas telling us about tomorrow's International Migratory Bird Day events at the Community Garden. It's starting at 8:30, goes till about 10, is that right? Or do I have that right?
8 to 10:30.
Sorry. Starts at 8 o'clock, goes to 10:30, and get there closer to the 8 o'clock side. Gwen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. And that's it for Juneau Afternoon for today. We're going to be joining NPR in just a moment.
Humankind.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI.